When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Dustin, you forgot to announce who's Loyola got this week in the state championship.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Dustin's going to end up buying my breakfast again, guys. I'm just throwing it out there.
We'll see if Loyola will end the Duke season for a third year in a row.
Ouch. That's got to
hurt. But this time in the finals, not in the semis.
Fitz's kid, I know we're off track, but Fitz's kid's the quarterback who's going down. He's playing really good for Loyola. Absolutely.
It's Mully and Haw. We've got Coach Wonstead. We've got Dustin and Brandon, his beloved Mount Carmel. And
yes.
David's team is also
in Indiana. State finals. Single A. Small school championship, Dave. So, Lucas Oil Stadium, Saturday morning. That's where I'm going to be.
You can get a lot of breakfast out of this.
North Jets and Blue Jays. Go Blue Jays. Definitely. But we were talking about the Bears, unfortunately.
Oh, boy.
I was trying to spin it positively, right?
Okay. You were going in the direction of Caleb Williams in the fourth quarter. He is a guy you want with the ball. If you're down 10, you need 2 scores. Your criteria for what a winning quarterback should look like, he has met that in the 3 losses, even though his teammates haven't held it up their end. He has been a guy that you could win because of.
Absolutely. That was the big thing, on our man Justin. We all love Justin, his toughness and all everything he brought, but his fourth quarter stats just did not stack up to what your criteria should be for an NFL Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I'll tell you what, Caleb in his rookie season, he has done it. So impressive. We still got to – guys, I got 2 pet peeves that I got to get this out.
Okay,
I won't sleep at
night.
One, we come out – halftime score is 14-10.
Yes.
In the third quarter, we throw it 8 times and run it 3 times. Okay? In the third quarter, we are on 50-yard line, and we have a second down and two. We go no backs and throw an incomplete pass. It's 4th and 2. We go for it, and we get tackled and give them the ball, and they get on and get points. I mean, that's opportunities where we got to be physical and you line up in the eye.
Just run the ball.
Run the ball with Roshan or whoever and make 2 yards. You got two chances to do it, and then we go for it. Why not trust our, has Flus lost confidence in our defense?
Well, he should.
14-10, don't you punt the ball there? Okay, we don't make it. I would have punted it because I would have said, okay, I got an all-pro kicker, my opinion. Rookie of the year, special teams guy. Kick it inside the 10.
Are you talking about 4th and 4?
Yes.
4th and 4 at the 20? No. Dave, don't you want to go for that?
Wait, I'm talking about 2.
Okay.
Fourth and 2.
4th and 2. Okay, 4th and 2.
Right.
I see. All right. Yeah. Punt and pin. Okay.
Where was the ball at?
Find
the 50-yard line.
Let me check here because I think we're talking about 2 different things.
Yeah, I think we are.
Okay.
Because I came out of my chair on that one. Yeah.
Your point about Thomas Brown is, though, you need him to take the gimme, right?
Absolutely.
I want to know why Eberflus should still have faith in his defense. Because what I saw in that game, Dave, was every time there was a moment, every time, like you block a field goal, you don't have to let him come down and score a touchdown. That's a good spot to get off the field.
Yep.
When you miss a 2-point conversion, you don't have to let him come down and get a field goal.
100%, yep.
When you get the ball in overtime, you get a bad sack, and then you give up the ball. You don't have to let him convert on a 1st and 20 or a 2nd and 17. It was almost like distance didn't matter in overtime. How is that humanly possible for what it's David said? We projected as a top 10 defense we thought could be in the top 5. Well, let me tell you something. That's a pipe dream. They don't look like they're able to stop anyone.
No, that was discouraging. I mean, they averaged 7 yards a play, run and pass combined. We were 5.5 in people don't want to hear this, but the when you combine the run and you combine the pass average to have a winning chance over the years, I would always say, guys, we need to be in that 5.5 range. Yep. 5.5 yards a play, run and pass combined. And they were 7 yards. We were 5.5, though. So we really, you know, like you said, Caleb put us in position to win that game, guys. That's
11 points in 22 seconds.
Yeah.
That's a
gut punch.
That's a great accomplishment for a rookie quarterback, but it didn't mean anything because his teammates didn't pick him up. Let me ask you this. As a former special teams coordinator, as a guy that's been a head coach at two different NFL teams, you had to have cringed when you saw the Bears have a field goal blocked for the second week in a row. Where did you see the breakdown, and how much it's fair to blame that or hold the coach responsible for those breakdowns?
Well, you know what? This is what happens. If you blitz a quarterback and he throws an interception or he tucks it, that we used to use the expression, that opens up a can of worms. And now everybody starts spending extra time and looking extra hard at why did this blitz work, and maybe we can do it.
Yeah.
You know, so the minute you get one block, now I'm sure that they studied that tape, and teams talk. Don't think, even though they're competition, don't think for 1 minute the special teams coach at Green Bay didn't talk to the special teams coach at Minnesota. Okay, I don't know if he did. I'm just saying that I can remember Jeff Fisher and I, we were in the same division. He was a coordinator for Buddy at Philadelphia Eagles when Buddy was the head coach, Ryan, and I was obviously at Dallas. And Fish and I would talk, you know, not when we competed against each other.
But what worked against one team? Hey, you played the Giants.
What were you trying to do on that? He called me, hey, Dave, against Washington, you know, you guys were running this coverage. What was your thinking there? You know, and we would talk, you know, because we had a good relationship. And so, that's kind of what's happened now. I didn't see anybody get turned loose. Did we get pushed back a little bit? Sure. Can we be a little stronger? Hopefully. But nobody got turned loose.
But, Dave, they made no personnel changes from the block 1 week to the block the next until after the block. Then they made a change. What are you waiting on? Why aren't you, if you're Richard Hightower, going over the tape too? What is our weakness here? Why are we not able to hold up?
And you asked Olin, you asked Pat Manley.
Yes.
We would end our field goal period, whether we used to do it in the beginning after stretching that because I wanted to put an emphasis on it. Guess what? The last three were live. We did them full speed. And you can ask Manley, everywhere I coached, those kickers get out on the other field and the snap is perfect, the hold is perfect, and the kick is perfect. And I turn to the special teams coach when I was the head coach and say, he made 20 for 20 from 50. Okay, great. Now put the ball down. Defense, full speed.
Right, yeah. Right. And oops.
So are we doing that would be the question.
I don't know.
You know, otherwise,
that's a good question.
I'm trying to get to Mully's question. If you don't do that, you know, you're going to.
You're not learning anything.
Yeah, and how do you know if you're, you know, that's the only way you get better at field goal protection is you got to do it, and you got to do it live. I know that from experience. And that's how you got to give the effort to block it, too. Everybody blocks it against bags.
This segment with Dave Wannstedt is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business. All right, Dave, so coaches are hired to be fired. I think you understand that. You've been a lifer in the profession. I ask you this, and this is kind of off the wall maybe, but you've been fired. As you were on the hot seat, was there any point, any stop that you felt like, you know, you take a step back, I get it. I understand why I'm being criticized. I understand what's going wrong here. I understand that it's not all under my control, but you know what? I maybe haven't done a great job, and I do deserve the scrutiny. Do you ever have that moment, or are you too immersed in everything you're doing, if you're Matt Eberflus, if you're Shane Waldron, if whatever, to kind of grasp the fact that, you know, the outcome might not be something that you deserve?
Well, I think you have to separate it, okay? 4 wins, 5 wins. That's not good enough, okay? I get that part of the profession. Put that in one box. But then you're always looking as a coach saying, what happened? Oh, okay, we if we had our starter in there, we could have done it. If we didn't have a official call, we could have done it. So as coaches, you know, you're always not justifying, but you're always saying, you know, that for the most part, you had a pretty good plan.
You're rationalizing.
You're rationalizing would be a good way
but
to do
Matt
it.
But Matt Eberflus seems sometimes oblivious to what's going on around him, and I don't know if that's intentional or if I don't know that's just because he's so immersed in the day-to-day activity.
I can tell you this, and Mully was here working. The last game that I coached for the Bears, it was at home, and it was against the Packers. And they had gone to a Super Bowl, and they were going to another. It was Favre and Reggie White and them. And we were one score. And we had the ball in the fourth quarter. And I remember saying, I think Matt Cavertoni, I said to one of my assistants, guys, if we can score and win this game, I think we can, you know, we all knew that if we lost, we were going to be out. Okay. Yeah. No, I got it. Okay. I'm a big boy. I understand the deal. But up until the fourth quarter with 8 minutes to go, we had the ball. I said, guys, if we can score somehow here, we're going to win this game at home. And I had the optimistic view that maybe that would save it, and then they stopped us and they won, I think, by a touchdown or something at the end of the game. But
I remember that very well, Dave. I remember all of that. I'm wondering, I mean, you know, when we ask a question about whether Eberflus knows what's going on, like the crowd will let you know what's going on. You will hear from the crowd. They will be chanting things at you like they chanted Fire Flus at the end of that game. I just wonder about the impact on your home life, on your kids.
Yeah.
Everybody hears it. Everybody knows it. It's not it just makes you feel awful.
It does.
People.
And the assistant coaches, and their kids, you know, everybody forgets about the trainers and the equipment, everybody that's involved. I mean, nowadays they come in, they bring a whole new crew. So, no, it's a tough deal, and we got a lot of games left, so a lot of things can happen. God, I still remember the Tribune. It might have been my last game or something because it was Christmas time, and front page of the Tribune, there was a guy holding a sign with a Santa Claus outfit on. He says, all I want for Christmas is a new head coach, and I had Joey DeBono from Tofano's Restaurant, good friend. Him and Tony Wise started going up in the stands after this guy. and a guy took a picture, and it was the front page of the Tribune. It's one of those papers, you know. Yeah. And to this day, it was Joey and Tony Wise going up after Santa Claus. Yeah. So it hasn't got to that point yet.
It hasn't. No.
But we got a lot of games, guys. We may win every one of these, right?
But I know, but in the context of this season, they have fired an offensive coordinator. They had never done that before. You're one bad loss away from a six-game losing streak, and you wonder, it's fair conversation. Will the Bears fire
for the first time in
Matt Eberflus if they lose in embarrassing fashion on Thursday?
No.
Why are the McCaskies,
why won't they do that?
Why do they cling to that?
Because who are you going to replace him with?
Right.
What's going to change?
That's never the right answer.
I know, but that's the wrong question.
John Hoke. He's a veteran coach. Yeah. He's a good coach. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just asking.
If you feel strongly enough about needing change, I think you enact the change and you worry about the details later because you're not salvaging your season.
Yeah. I think if the offense can keep making steps forward and Caleb keeps doing some good things.
You want that continuity?
Yeah.
You value that over everything else?
I think that may be as important as anything at this point in the season. Keep this ship from not going off the track with Caleb. Let's see if we can get, you know, some good games out of him and get his confidence up. I mean, you come into next year in the future and you got a quarterback, you say, we got a guy. That is huge. The Bears haven't had that ever, maybe, you know, or Sid Luckman days, you know, I don't know, you know.
Let's go back to your time in Dallas, and you are the hottest assistant coach in the league.
Yeah.
And you've got an opportunity at whatever job you really want. You interview, I believe, with the Giants. You could have taken that job, but you'd still be in the division. You'd be going against your friend and mentor, Jimmy, and you end up taking the Bears job. Does the relationships with that, and I'm asking because Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, whoever is coaching in Detroit,
right,
they might be candidates Would they not want to go against Dan Campbell? Does that influence where you take your next job, if indeed a job were open?
Well, it wasn't the determining factor, but it was part of it, you know, part of it. When I took this job, I knew that it was going to be a turnover. You know, we had 14 guys from the Super Bowl team.
Oh, I know.
You know, that it was going to be a major turnover, yeah. But I was very – Bill Tobin was the personnel guy. Bill did a very good job. I was, you know, not had a problem working with him. I mean, so the division back then, I mean, it wasn't – Brett Favre wasn't here going.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they didn't trade for Reggie White.
It also could be as simple as you want to avoid the Lions, or you wanted to avoid – The Cowboys, because those are the best teams the conference.
And the division looks the division, pretty loaded right now.
The word I'm hearing on the street from pretty good sources that the job that Bill Belichick is probably really looking at hard, if there's an opportunity, would be Jacksonville, if there's an opportunity, just because of the division. Right, yep. You look at that division, and Trevor Lawrence. God, I mean, I know he's having a terrible year, but he's got more ability than that, you know. And if you're Bill Belichick or any coach,
unlock that.
Unlock it, David, and go. So,
and you got to wonder if a guy like Bill likes the way the Bears have built this team. In other words, not from the ball out, not the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. They need to improve that, and you just wonder if a guy who's been around like him feels like you can come in and win if you haven't built.
I think that's one mistake. I sent it to Olin yesterday. I could probably pull it up here. They had the best rookie offensive lineman out there right now, win percentage. And two of the guy at Oregon State and the center, Frazier, that's with the Steelers, are in the top 10 of all the offensive linemen. And when you look at who's the two best, most physical teams right now in the NFC? No question. Detroit, Philadelphia. Yeah,
yes.
That's right.
Who's the two best offensive lines in the NFC right now?
Detroit and Philadelphia.
By design. That's a big flaw in the way Ryan Poles put this roster together.
So it just came to mind when you said build it from the front back or back, however you said it.
Build from the ball on out.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do.
How violent will this game be?
Well, on a short week, let me tell you, I got a lot of experience at Thursday games. You know, going back to my Pitt days playing West Virginia, and then obviously every year at Dallas, and then here at the Bears. So I can tell you this, that what happens the Sunday before does have an impact on the next week coming up, from the standpoint of you got to walk in there Monday morning and you've got to put that game aside and get ready to play.
Yes.
Not just with X and O's, but mentally. I mean, this is going to be a physical fist fight. They could be the most physical team in the NFL, Detroit. So when we walked in there yesterday, starting with Flus, on down to the last guy, we got to start thinking about a heavyweight fight and getting physical with these guys. And when you're coming off a tough loss, all of a sudden that sore shoulder just seems to linger a little bit more.
Yeah.
And but you got to get it back. I mean, you got to turn it fast, because we're going to be up there kicking off against Detroit before anybody realizes it.
Quick college football thought. Why is one-loss Indiana more or less viable for the college football playoff, this top 12, than maybe a 2 or 3-loss SEC team?
Because of their win-loss differential. They have, I think, maybe the best in college football. As far as
they pounded people.
They pounded.
But their schedule hasn't been as tough as some others.
No, schedule hasn't been as tough, and they acknowledge that. But when they've lined up, you play who you got.
I'm with you, Dave. The argument is against it.
It's going to be fun tonight. We're talking about it. Those 3-loss SEC teams are out. They're out. You can't go on the road to a team that's not ranked and lose and think it's not going to impact. Alabama scored 6 points.
Right, come on.
Good luck.
Right, Brand carries some weight, but not that much weight.
No.
Please,
it's a problem for them.
No, Indiana's going to be fine, and the key in this playoff thing, and I know we're moving here, is to me it's home game. You know, you want to buy. The people in college football don't understand how important that buy is, you know, and I'm trying. But when you look at the NFL numbers and Super Bowl winners, it's huge to get the buy, right? So, and the second thing is, if Penn State gets a home game, I've been using them as an example.
Yeah.
I don't care who they play. And there's going to be two afternoon games and two night games, the way the scheduling's set up. Let's say Penn State gets a night game at home, and they have their whiteout tradition up there. Coach, that's a tough-ass place to play.
Tough environment.
Yeah, tough. I mean, that's an advantage for—
No doubt.
So you want to buy, and you want that home game in college football.
Who you picking, Bears against Lions on Thanksgiving?
Oh, God. I won last week. I had the Bears last week. 3.5
and
points.
They covered.
When we went to overtime and they stopped us, you know what was going through my mind? They better not let them get on and score a touchdown, or I'm going to lose the game and lose my damn bet. But they covered.
What's happened to you, Dave Wonstead?
I was 5 for 5 last weekend.
Look
all right?
at that.
5 for 5. Okay. But this will be a tough one. I would take the Lions. What is the spread? I don't even know.
10.5.
Wow.
Yes. Big number.
That's a good number. That's tempting.
Big number.
Big number.
Big number.
10.5.
I think they cover it, though.
Yeah, they might cover it. I got to think about that. Win the game. It's going to be tough. But the number, they might cover. I'll leave it at that.
Well, Dave, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Dave, have a great one, buddy.
Thank you for everything.
Same to you guys. Thank you.
The Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
What's your review of the failed challenge on the Addison play?
Yeah, so the view of that, you know, first of all, I threw the challenge flag because it was an explosive. It's 69 yards, and our defense did a wonderful job of stopping them, you know, there for a field goal. I was really pleased with that part of it. But again, when that's an explosive there, we want to make sure that we want to throw that flag. Again, I understand, you know, sideline and all that stuff, cameras and all that, but they've done a good job of replay assisting, you know, coming in and working with that. But again, I think it's always warrants a challenge when you got that big of a gain. If it was 6 yards, no one would care. If it was 15 yards, I don't think you would care. But with 70 yards, it's worth it, even if we don't have the best look that we want to have.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's Matt Eberflus explaining his challenge on the big play to open the second half.
69-yard play, and it was really a breakdown in defense, backbreaker as well. You come right out of the gate, and boom, they hit you. And Jordan Addison, I'll be honest, Mully, I'm watching in the press box, I'm watching the replay. I thought he stepped out of bounds. I thought he was just a smidge out of bounds. And I thought when he threw the flag, I understood why. And then they did the review when we heard from Mike Pereira on Fox. And to cut to the chase, essentially, there was an angle to that play from a boundary cam that could not be used because not every stadium has boundary cams.
That blew my mind.
Isn't that crazy?
It's insane.
So all but
why have replay if you don't have if you are not allowed to use all the technology that you have?
Not every stadium in the league has a boundary cam, which was used in the replay in question. And so coaches, if a coach is challenged, you can't use the boundary cam. There's not a boundary cam in every stadium, so there's a question of competitive equity.
Now, you talked to Mike Pereira last night.
So, yes, on the Big Pro Football Show on the Chicago Sports Network, Mike Pereira was asked about this by Ruthie Polinsky and I.
I think they're just concerned about, competitive equity. You know, since there are still stadiums that don't have it, is it fair to the coach to use this type of camera, this type of aid, the challenge of play when other coaches and some of the other stadiums don't? I think it's a legit, reasoning, although I have always felt as long as the playing level is even between the two teams that are playing, you know, then I kind of say then to me that's competitive equity. But it's a slow rollout, which they tend to do, but we're getting to that point where Bill Belichick's finally going to sit back in his chair and say, finally, I got what I was asking Pereira for. Every damn year I was asking him for this. And it is a good thing, but they're not network cameras. They're not our cameras. They're fixed cameras. And if they're going to use it, then they have to feed us the camera shot that they're going to use. But you know, as I said, if it's a scoring play, you can use it. But let's don't give those coaches any more advantage, I guess, when maybe some other coaches don't.
Yeah, I think the key to what he said there, which I agree with, is if you have the camera in a game and it's available to the two teams that are competing on the day, I don't care if they have it in Tennessee.
It shouldn't matter.
Wherever. wherever.
If they don't have it in Landover, Maryland, why should it affect the two coaches on the job at Soldier Field?
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
And what did that show?
It showed you want to get every angle. You want to get every call as correct as you can possibly be.
But was he out? Would that have changed the call?
I don't think he was out.
Yeah, I think he was in.
I think he was in.
But
he looked like he was out at first. But then you see the angle, and he's like, maybe not.
When I watched the game and we were doing the post game, it was like I'm driving downtown. It's like a little splinter that you have in your finger that's bothering you. It was a rock in my shoe.
By the same token, did you think Keenan Allen was out or in?
Oh, I thought that the white shoe bailed him out on that one, and
I did too.
I thought he was. Thought he was inbound.
They called him out.
Oh, I know.
Because why did they have? Did they use the boundary cam on that?
Question.
That
no,
was one.
Because they're
games,
not allowed to.
Well, they're allowed to unless the coach challenges it.
Yeah, but they're allowed to if it's a scoring play.
On scoring plays, turnovers, or calls late in each half, the NFL allows officials to use every tool at their disposal. But if a coach is questioning whether the ref made a mistake or is challenging the play, no boundary cam.
God.
Make it make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. I don't get it. And I think that it had basically no bearing on the game. Nobody's suggesting that.
But if Bill's been asking for it for that long,
it was hilarious. That was the first thing Pereira mentioned Bill Belichick has been after him for that long.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
By the time he gets to Jacksonville, maybe they'll have it all figured out.
Yeah, Bill's going to Jacksonville. We're breaking news here.
Well, that's what Dave Wansett told me.
Well, he did say that.
He predicted that. Yeah. And, you know, he's on the 33rd team, which is basically advising teams now what to do.
Wow.
Isn't that something? The Jets are now retaining the 33rd team.
I think the way Dave explained it makes sense that they have they have their former GM there still.
Mike Tannenbaum.
That Woody Johnson knows well, and so he's just consulting with him more than the 33rd.
Let me ask you this. If you fired somebody, would you still have a relationship with him that you valued his judgment?
I think that you're hired to be fired in the NFL, right? And I think that, like, If George called Dave, he'd probably help him out. You know what I mean? I'm just being honest. They had a good relationship
ago,
when he was here. It was a long time
ago. Yeah, Dave has definitely reinvented himself in Chicago.
Yes.
And I think that's a big part of it. I'm not sure. Maybe Mike Tannenbaum fits the same sort of category.
Yeah, I don't know him well enough. I don't.
He's got some hot takes.
Yeah. I mean, some wrong takes.
Some really hot takes.
You know what's funny is, like, when you hear a guy with a hot take that you really disagree with, you're kind of like, that's wrong. I know that's wrong.
Well, it depends on what the rationale is for me. I think that I don't think we want to say just because we disagree with somebody, you disqualify them as being credible. But I think it's how they get there.
Yeah, I don't think I did disqualify them for their credibility.
Okay.
I just said that I have heard him express
your reaction was like, it kind of tells me you kind of like doubt him.
There was a couple of times that he's been wrong, in my opinion.
If I'm to quote you correctly, you were like,
I don't think I went, but Brandon probably has the tape. It's going to come back later.
No, forget that. Don't.
Where Mully says,
he's busy eating breakfast.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. All right, 312-644-6767. Let's get to Al. Al's in Valpo. Hey, Al.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
y'all. My question is this. Is Ryan Poles the guy to really build this team? We have to get a head coach paired with him, and they have to go up and down the roster and find out if he's capable of really putting a roster together. Not 22, but a 53-man roster that can compete with Detroit and Green Bay, just in our division.
It's a fair question. It is the question and the only one that really matters moving forward as you evaluate every aspect of this operation and organization. The head coach is likely to be fired at some point, whether it's Friday or at the end of the season. The question then would become, a conversation would revolve around whether or not Ryan Poles is the man for the job. I think they will nod and lean into continuity and keep him. Even though it's fair to question some of the decisions that he's made and the roster he's put together, because they're not a team that's built intentionally from the ball on out. They tried. Larry Ogunjobi didn't work. The offensive line hasn't come together in the way they envisioned.
Boy, I mean, that is the understatement of the year. It's pretty shocking how it hasn't come together in the way they envisioned. And I mean, like, I don't know what the answer is moving forward. It hasn't come together. Do they go into free agency and try to get a lineman immediately to help?
Yes.
Do they draft two offensive linemen in the first three picks?
Yes.
Do they draft a defensive end or a three technique, depending on who the coach is and what his defense is? I mean, I think you got to improve the offensive line. I mean that. I don't believe they're going to bring Tevin Jenkins back. Do you? Just seems like he's missed a lot of time.
Why would you?
Well, I think it's a tough one.
Why would you?
Well, I don't think they're gonna
have any kind of durability that you trust.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So that means, and I, you know,
you've got to replace both guards.
Olin telling us that the center has gotten better as the year has gone on,
but he's not a long-term solution.
No, but
he's a Band-Aid.
You need to. I mean, if you have that Carolina second-round pick, you need to use that on a center, maybe, or a.
You're going to draft high.
You got your own number one,
which could be a top 10 pick.
And you got their number one, which you could have two picks in the top 10, sadly. And if you do, I think you got to get a pass rusher and an offensive lineman. And then I would come back.
You've got their second round pick.
You've got their second round pick.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you've got your own pick, which could be top 10. And then you got theirs, which could be the top of the second round.
Either a defensive end or a lineman with your number one pick. And then the Bears will have two in the top 10 of the second round.
You could conceivably have three of the top 40 picks.
Yes, and I would use one on a defensive lineman
and two offensive linemen. Yes, I'm with you.
That's where I am right now.
I think as we begin our draft analysis on November 26th.
Hey, you know what?
I get it, though.
That's called Friday's show. Oh, what are you talking about, Mulligan? We're not even working Friday. What a jerk.
But it's a fair point. It's unfortunately the direction they're going to have to go because they have to pick up the pieces after a season that has been, you know, smashed into smithereens. This is not the season anybody anticipated talking about on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's been rough, and it hasn't been good. We're going to bring in Mike Florio next. We'll find out his thoughts. I bet he's regretful about thinking that the Vikings were going to lose,
although they should cover.
I wonder if he's going to pick the Bears again to cover the 10.5.
Ever.
Yeah, maybe never. But we'll talk to Mike next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
Get better and better!
We can't beat, beat!
We can't beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
What's happening? Gator!
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us now on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Doing all right.
You know, we're doing fine, and we're appreciative of watching some good coaching in a football game like we saw last night. It was fun to see the Harbaugh brothers go at it the way they did. It was a really good football game, And I heard John tell us that Jim's the best coach in the league. It makes you wonder why the Bears didn't get involved when he was available. But that's an old storyline. The Bears never fire a coach in season, Mike. But if they lose on Thursday at Detroit, it will be six in a row, and the fans have made their feelings apparent. Why don't they fire a coach in season? Why does that mean something to them? And do you think that at some point that comes to an end?
You know, different teams have different procedures and approaches. The Steelers have this goofy thing where they don't do new contracts with players or coaches once the regular season starts. I don't like that. And I don't like the idea of not acknowledging what you've already decided to do. If the Bears are going to hire a new coach after the season. And this is the justification that was given when the Packers fired Mike McCarthy with several games left in 2017. Why don't you just move on and then you can start looking for the next coach? You don't have to tiptoe around his back. You're not lying to him. You're not running a scam. You're starting your process of searching for your next coach. The search doesn't begin the day after the season ends, and owners don't roll out of bed the day after the season ends and say, let me see, fire the coach, not fire the coach. Maybe I'll flip a coin on it. They know by then what they're going to do. So I'm always in favor of the moment you know what you're going to do, implement it. Because delaying it for whatever reason, once you know, it's one thing to delay it to say, I really want to be sure. That's different. Once you're sure and once you know, it's a mistake to wait because it keeps you from starting your search for the next coach. And anything you do behind the scenes to find your next coach is going to undermine the guy who's currently there.
Mike, which player has the best chance or a better chance of being named the MVP? Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley?
Well, probably Saquon Barkley, because Lamar Jackson's a more viable MVP candidate than Derrick Henry, and I could see them splitting votes. Now, the voting process currently is you go five deep. It used to just be one, winner take all. So I could see some teams putting two guys on the MVP list, but Barkley right now is on the pace to break the single-season rushing record. That's the kind of historic accomplishment you need to bust through the presumption that the MVP will be the quarterback of one of the teams that gets a bye. That's the way it's gone every year since 2013. 2012, Adrian Peterson nearly set the single-season rushing record and took the MVP away from Peyton Manning. Every year since then, the MVP is a quarterback who plays for a team that got a first-round bye in the playoffs. Even after they switched to one bye per conference, it's been a team with a quarterback who got a bye. That's who the MVP is. So that's what Barkley has to go up against. So when it's all said and done, and that's the reality, we don't cast the votes until right after the regular season ends. Well, at that point, the playoff tree is staring us in the face. We know who the number one seeds are. Bills. Hey, Josh Allen. What is it, Josh Allen or is it Saquon Barkley? Is it Patrick Mahomes or is it Saquon Barkley if the Chiefs are the one seed? Is it Jared Goff if the Lions are the number one seed? Now, if the Eagles are the one seed, it makes it a lot easier to go with Saquon Barkley. Maybe that's the key. A running back from the one seed can get it if that running back has a great year.
Mike, you picked the Vikings to lose to the Bears, and we were all very pumped up. And unfortunately, the Bears did come back. I believe they covered. It was three in the hook. But what is your take this week? Are they going to upset the Lions on Thanksgiving?
Well, we saw the Packers do it last year, but that was kind of the first step in this late season push by the Packers to become highly competitive. And Bill Belichick says football season starts at Thanksgiving. This is the chance for the Bears to do some redemption. Short week. Lions are a little banged up. Amon-Ra St. Brown wouldn't have practiced yesterday with a knee issue. They've got some defensive players who are injured. And there's something about Thanksgiving, and there's something about digging deep and something about seizing the moment, taking advantage of the opportunity. The Bears have not played poorly since the offensive coordinator shift. I did think that they would beat the Vikings on Sunday, and it was impressive to see them score 11 points in the final 22 seconds. And I thought at that point they're going to win the game. And I did pick them to win, and I got the cover, which is good. But I really was surprised they didn't pull it off. It felt like, to me, the Vikings record was a little fugazi at 8-2, and now it's 9-2, which is just incredible when you watch the team play. But to their credit, they're getting it done. And that's the thing. And this is kind of like what the Vikings were 2 years ago. And maybe there's some carryover from that. Any of the guys who are still left. Most games are close, and it comes down to a handful of moments. And when you can get those things to bend your way, just one more than goes against you, that's the difference between winning and losing. That's the difference between winning five in a row or losing five in a row. And, you know, the Bears have, what, had three games on the final play that they've lost in this five-game losing streak? Yeah. And you just got to find a way to make those moments go your way.
That doesn't sound like a prediction, Mike. But have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'll make my pick as late as possible for that game. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears stunned them. I wouldn't be surprised. I short week football, things can get a little screwy, And we've seen screwy outcomes on Thanksgiving. So I don't know. I probably won't pick them, but I'm going to root for them just because I want to have a good game.
You're the best. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
You too, buddy. That is Mike Florio, and that's nice. Come on.
He's looking at the bright side.
I'm still debating in my mind if you're accurate when you say that this is the only meal, Thanksgiving, where one has stuffing.
Think about that.
Yeah. It's
I think it is.
True.
I think I'm right.
I think you are right.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. we will be back tomorrow, and we will be making our picks.
All right.
Just want to let everyone know. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago. We got Jared Payton next on The Score.